This podcast was recorded Thursday, April 26th at 9 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear it.
Yeah, like Blue Jackets coach John Tortorella will guarantee Bill O'Neill will be elected governor.
Okay, time for the podcast. This is Snollygoster, WOSU's weekly look at Ohio politics. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up later in the podcast, John Kasich takes gun control into his own hands. And Mary Taylor is fighting to the end in her race against Mike DeWine.
But first, ECOT, the Electronic Classroom of Tomorrow, is back in the news and given new life as a campaign issue.
We all know the story. ECOT was a virtual charter school. Students took classes online from their homes. Like all charter schools, ECOT got money from the state.
But the state found ECOT inflated its attendance numbers and ordered it to pay back $60 million. After a failed court fight, ECOT ran out of money and closed up shop.
Now it comes out that even during its fight to stay open, ECOT may have been intentionally manipulating attendance data to maximize the amount of money it got from the state. This according to an anonymous whistleblower who spoke to our guest this week, Associated Press State House correspondent Julie Carr Smythe. Good to see you, Julie.
Good morning, Mike.
You've been causing a lot of trouble, Julie. Last week it was Dennis Kucinich getting $20,000 for a speech, and this week, ECOT. Good work.
Well, thank you very much. It's the time of year, time of life, I think, for political reporters that the news never stops.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, I'm happy to see it.
It keeps us busy. Anyway, get back to the ECOT. We don't want to jeopardize your source or reveal your reporting methods, but how did you find this guy?
Well, as you can tell from reading the stories, he had a lot of concerns that he had been taking, really, I won't say to everyone who will listen, because he was concerned for his job and his livelihood, but he had gone around to some different authorities and finally decided to come to the press. I think I was recommended to him as a reporter who could be trusted to work with an anonymous source. And so I did speak with him and got him to talk to me about what he knew. And then I proceeded, because AP is very cautious about anonymous sources for obvious reasons. I proceeded for several weeks, maybe a couple months, to try to find someone to corroborate his story. What I learned in the process of that is that ECOT had received commitments from people, non-disclosure agreements, when they would give severance to people to leave the school to not talk. And adding that to the fact some people who may know about this were currently employed or also worried, I wasn't able to do that. So I had put in a records request, and from there was able to at least document that he had written public documents to the Ohio Department of Education, which gave AP the comfort level to put it forward and then to use his interview to sort of bolster the story.
So the email basically confirmed his story.
Correct. And yes.
Can you talk about, again, without jeopardizing his identity, what he did basically for ECOT and what his allegations are?
Well, what I can say is that he was a technology worker at the school through last July. The first time that he went to the Ohio Department of Education was essentially as soon as he left in August. And what his allegations are is that they had installed a software called ActiveTrack on about 20,000 ECOT computers, or they had purchased about 20,000 copies of it.
These are computers that students have.
Right, for the most part. And the idea was that they needed to start this tracking. Like it or not, the state had said, we have to track learning hours, so you need to go in there and figure out a way to do that, which ECOT had always said it wasn't capable of doing, it didn't need to do legally, etc. So this was the software that was part of their solution to that. My understanding is that the way ActiveTrack works is it will allow you to identify time blocks of activity. It doesn't really have a log-in, log-off function. It was built by a business that made it available to employers who essentially wanted to watch their workers, for example, are they running a business on state time? Are they watching?
Are they really working from home?
Are they watching a porn channel instead of doing that assignment that I gave them?
Yeah.
So you can see that it would track them, but it isn't necessarily going to log that in. As the source said to me, you know, ECOT isn't the NSA. They're not Google. They can't figure out every minute of every thing that you're doing. The way I would describe it is, say you are a student and you watch a film for an hour. If I break that into 15-minute blocks, I'm going to show four active blocks. If I break that into a six-hour block, I'm going to show one six-hour active block.
Yeah.
So that's the way that you can kind of pad what the students were doing.
And that's what this person was saying that ECOT was doing.
That they were essentially meeting, running scenarios, seeing really bad outcomes, and then running different scenarios.
And ECOT officials have flat out denied, I mean, ECOT is closed now, but their longtime lobbyist and attorney, Neil Clark, who you spoke to, denied this, right?
What Neil said was he no longer works for them, but that he thinks a lot of people have made up stories like this because they feel like kicking a corpse, that they just can't get over the fact that ECOT did nothing wrong. And but he doesn't, I don't think, have any personal knowledge of yes or no on what was going on in the data department at this level.
But the story has legs because this person says he went to authorities and they did nothing really for months, according to him.
That's right. I put the story out on Monday morning, and what I had was the Ohio Department of Education emails and communications showing that they had heard from him in August, finally met with him in December. So they were saying, well, that was after we had already concluded our count for the previous school year, 2016-17. We met with him, and we're going to incorporate into our next review. In the process of the course of the day, we found out in getting responses from the auditor's office, oh, we've talked to the guy too. And maybe before the audit period that closed in June, which means he came to them before he even left the school.
Yeah.
And so, yes, he had gone to those authorities. According now to the auditor's office, they interviewed him three times, went and met him, I think, in, you know, some secure location. And their audit that includes that input also has not been released.
And Democrats claim that this should have been referred to criminal prosecutors or investigators because this was, could be considered fraud, trying to get as much money out of the state as you can, perhaps money they don't deserve.
Right. The idea is that whether or not our charter school laws in Ohio are strong enough to have caught learning hour tracking kind of errors, so to speak, that this shows intent for the first time. Really, what we've seen so far has been a dispute about computer programs, counting, data, sorting data, combinations from different programs. It was all very technical in nature. And the education department did say, you know, it's not really up to us to prove intent or to even delve into intent.
This certainly could still be referred to prosecutors. Dave Yost's investigation into Columbus City Schools led to some criminal charges against some administrators in the district. So this is certainly not beyond the point of criminal charges.
That's right. So Yost has now announced that he will put his audit out May 1st, next week. And I spoke to Ron O'Brien, the Franklin County prosecutor, and he said that's the normal process. Dave finishes his audit. He decides if there's criminal activity. And remembering that the auditor's office does have a criminal, you know, they do have a criminal component. They do, some of them carry guns.
Yeah.
They do have a law enforcement powers. But he would refer at that point if he has found anything to be suspect, criminal, at a criminal level to Ron or to the city prosecutor.
So the next step in this whole process drops probably May 1st when this audit comes out.
Right.
And Dave Yost is running for attorney general, which would be the chief law enforcement officer in the state, taking a lot of heat from his opponent, Steve Dettelbach, who is a former U.S. attorney, that you know, he should have done more. And this will be an issue now for the campaign.
Right, right. And I think that between the lines, I felt like when Dettelbach came out this week and said, you know, he really should have referred it immediately, people are potentially, witnesses are dispersing, evidence is being lost, and actually just this week we are seeing that the court monitor in the ECOT case is ready to sell off some more stuff. In reading between the lines, it felt a little bit like there, you know, maybe there was a theory that Yost was sitting on this so that he could pop it at an opportune political moment.
Oh, okay. Because Dettelbach was also accusing the other way, that he's sitting on it because he had received campaign contributions from the founder of ECOT, had spoken at ECOT graduations and things like that.
Right. I mean,
who knows?
I don't know, because you're looking at now a year since some people in the state government first heard from this person.
Julie Carr Smythe from the Associated Press has led reporting on the latest scandal involving the Electronic Classroom of Tomorrow, or ECOT. Julie, thanks for coming in.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right, next topic. With his modest gun control package going nowhere fast, at least at the State House, Governor Kasich this week turned to an executive order.
Kasich ordered a review, a study, to see which, if any, local officials are properly reporting crime convictions and sentences to the National Instant Criminal Background Check System. The NICS system is used for gun background checks. Investigations have found some agencies take months to report that information.
We've got a case here in Ohio where this data is not being reported. So you have people who are felons who, with the data not being put into the NICS system, people who have no business having guns have these guns.
Some gun rights activists immediately criticized the governor, among them Mary Taylor, saying this order infringes on their Second Amendment rights. Mike Thompson, why are gun rights activists upset by this?
You know, I don't know. Now, let's say it is the far, far right, the very conservative gun rights activists that are upset by this. It's also Mary Taylor, who is frankly pandering to those folks, who is upset by this. But all John Kasich is doing is enforcing the law.
He's improving a system that already exists.
No, he's not even improving it. He's asking them to follow the system that already exists.
Right.
Basically, he's asking them, when you get a conviction, when your sentence is imposed, report that to the background check system. And gun rights activists say over and over again, we don't need any new gun laws. Let's just make sure the laws that we have now work. Let's enforce the laws that we have now. And that's exactly what the governor is doing here. So I think that the gun rights activists lose credibility when every time somebody says we need to tighten up something regarding guns, they claim the Second Amendment rights are being infringed upon. When these laws are on the books, their whole point is that guns don't kill people. People kill people. We need to keep guns away from bad people, which is what John Kasich's order would do.
And context here matters. This comes as the president of the Ohio Senate, Larry Obhoff, said that John Kasich's gun control proposals will not be considered as a single bill. This included things like the red flag law that would allow judges to take guns of people who are deemed at risk of committing violence. This doesn't have a lot of teeth, right? He's just asking county clerks, basically, to do a better job, and they're opposing it.
He's not even doing that. He's asking for a review so we can find out which county clerks aren't doing this job. And then when they get this data, if there are county clerks that aren't doing their job, he's not going to punish them. He's just going to publicize that this county's delays it by 3 months in reporting this information to the background check system. So really, this could have been done in a regular administrative way. He could have just told his cabinet secretaries, you know what, I want to see what's going on here. Can you look at this? But he had a press conference. He had Andrew Ginther, Democrat, mayor of Columbus, up there to show that it's bipartisan. I think it's simply to put pressure on lawmakers to act on his, again, fairly modest gun control package that is now before the legislature.
He did say this week that the package of gun bills would pass if it was put to a vote on the Senate floor. I guess he's more confident than I am. I'm not sure it would pass.
Yeah, I'm not sure it would pass either. You know, I think he was just challenging them to put it up there for a vote. And my guess is that Republican leaders at the State House, they don't want to put their members their caucus members in a position to have it take an unpopular stance in an election year. Now, the NRA has said that they're not opposed to these red flag laws as long as there is a really solid due process involved where someone can prove that they are not a danger to commit violence and get their guns back.
Under the Ohio law, it would be a 14-day period. Yeah. People will be allowed to appeal,
yeah.
And then they would get a hearing within 14 days.
So, you know, some gun rights groups, the NRA in particular, have said, you know what, we're not going to oppose these if they're done properly. So we'll see. Lawmakers tend not to do anything remotely controversial right before voters go to the polls. So I still think that these proposals will go nowhere, but...
Let's turn now to the race to become Ohio's next governor. Mary Taylor is fighting back.
When voting for governor, remember one number, 962. Mike DeWine voted with Hillary Clinton 962 times. Amnesty, gun bans, more debt. D.C. DeWine voted with Hillary for all of it. I'm Mary Taylor, and I'm...
Mary Taylor there continuing her... misrepresentation, I think we would all say, of congressional votes, or when Mike DeWine voted with Hillary Clinton. This is boilerplate for her at this point. This is what she does.
Yeah, but I think this race is tighter than the public polls show. I think that we have to conclude that at this point, because Mike DeWine kept up his negative attacks, and this is her campaign spending money, but a conservative group donated $800,000 to her PAC, so we can expect them to run some ads in the closing weeks of the campaign. Mike DeWine likely will still win, but I think it's going to be a lot closer than 30 points that the last public poll showed. And she is tapping into something, the anti-D.C. feeling among Republicans. She keeps calling him D.C. DeWine. That's working for her. She wouldn't keep saying it if it wasn't working for her. And I give her credit. She's on camera in this ad calling Mike DeWine names.
She's looking right at the camera and saying all these things.
Where Mike DeWine's ad is a minor point, but he's using a voiceover in his ad. So, you know, it goes to her made tough image. So it's fun to watch. I don't think Republicans are too happy to see this infighting. The key will be after the primary, whoever wins, to see if they can mend fences and unify the party. It's going to be tough, though.
Mike DeWine appears to have gone a little soft with his most recent ads. They feature he and his wife holding hands, and she's talking about how he's his best friend. A far cry from when he called Mary Taylor a slacker and lazy.
But then after that, he called her phony and two-faced. They started out calling her a slacker. Then they had the nice soft and fuzzy ad.
I see.
And a couple of weeks later, he was back to name.
So he doesn't know what
again.
To do. He's all over the place.
Well, I think he knows that Mary Taylor's a threat, and we need to not take anything for granted. I think that's what the ads show. And, you know, it's more than just fighting back because Mary Taylor ran an ad that was unkind. I think it's more, you know, let's not take any chances with this. And we have money to spend, so let's go for it.
Time now for our weekly segment, John Kasich, GPS.
Ohio, Governor Kasich, welcome back to Meet the Press.
Thanks, Chuck.
Governor, welcome back to Fox News Sunday.
Rockville, isn't this close to Bethesda?
And we went to Tulsa instead of where we were going in Colorado.
I think I've eaten my way across the entire state of New York.
And Ground control to Major Tom, help me.
Okay, it looks like he stayed in Ohio this week, but he still made national news. CNBC reported that Kasich's allies are talking to mega donors to see if they might be willing to back a Kasich challenge to President Trump. I want to meet a mega donor. How do you get that title?
I don't know,
donor?
But I want to be a mega donor.
I know.
Just to have that much
just
money.
I just want to be a mega. mega donor.
Kasich allies, though, they might not want to mention a new poll out of New Hampshire. The University of New Hampshire Granite State poll shows in a head-to-head matchup Trump would beat Kasich. Ready for this, Mike? 67% to 19%.
Yeah, and Kasich
would more than triple him up.
And he loses in every category. You look at all the demos, and among Republican primary voters, John Kasich gets swamped. Now, it's early, and I think the allies are telling these mega donors that keep your options open in case Mueller's investigation goes somewhere, in case there's more scandals, in case there's a Democratic wave in the midterm elections. John Kasich could be a really good plan B if Donald Trump looks like he's in serious trouble for re-election in 2020.
And that will do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster. A brief reminder, our podcast is named after a 19th century term for a shrewd politician.
Shrewd. How about a shrewd mega donor? That'd be kind of cool.
They probably are all shrewd.
If you enjoyed the podcast, tell your friends about us. Let them know that this is good. You obviously think it's good because you listen to the whole thing. You can also give us a good review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Until next week, I'm Mike Thompson.
And I'm Steve Brown. This is Snollygoster.